Mini episode 151 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 151. We've got a very special one for you here at the mid-season point of the Major League Baseball campaign for this year. We have two guys who both have a tremendous passion for the game of baseball. One of our FDH Lounge dignitaries, Steve Callis, and WFAN regular Evan Roberts, who, of course, is on early afternoons, paired up with another erstwhile friend of the show, Joe Benigno. I'll refer everybody for a good laugh there. Go back and check in our YouTube archives for the program, the FDH Lounge, the YouTube channel. Go check and see Joe Benigno chewing out yours truly for happening to have the crime of rooting for two NFL teams. A very funny thing here. But, again, his partner, Evan Roberts, we're very happy to have on with us on the program, as we've had him on multiple times, of course, holding down the early afternoon slot at the most prestigious station in radio, WFAN, in New York. And as also mentioned, good friend of ours who's done a little bit of work there at WFAN in New York, one of our show regulars, Steve Callis, who started off basically covering the sports legal beat at WFAN, and as we indicated, has expanded to doing a little bit of other more general sports work there, as well as Monday through Friday, early afternoons, at our old stomping grounds, the Sports Talk Network, sportstalknetwork.com. Steve Callis doing the show there. Then also previously covering general sports for WVOX in Westchester. So a couple guys who really love baseball. We haven't had them on at the same time together on the show, but that's going to make this a fun segment. A couple guys who, as I indicated, know each other at least a little bit. Evan Roberts and Steve Callis. Gentlemen, welcome. Good to have you both on, fellas.
Yo, what's going on?
Good to be with you,
Ray. Hey, good to be with you guys, and I appreciate that. I know, Evan, you were jumping on right after filling in late afternoon at FAN, so I want to say we really appreciate you being able to join us here. I'll start with you. We're not going to talk probably too much on the All-Star game because it's of limited interest, I think, to people relative to the rest of the baseball season. But, Evan, looking at it here, it's got to be a little bit difficult as a Mets fan, everything that went down from R.A. Dickey getting stiffed because Buster Posey can't catch a knuckleball. I should say R.A. Dickey getting stiffed from starting the game, at least anyways. Kung Fu Panda stealing the third base spot from David Wright and then turning around to do something pretty good with it. A lot of shivs were coming the Mets' way from the Giants and their fans, it seems like. But as a Mets season ticket holder, how disgruntled are you about the way that it played out the last couple of days?
Well, I'm extremely excited, and thank you to Matt Cain and Pablo Sandoval and most of all Melky Cabrera that I will be at Game 1 of the World Series at Citi Field. So I want to thank them for the home field advantage, and I say that kind of tongue-in-cheek. But I wasn't really as upset about David, only because I get it, it's fan voting. And, you know, the Giants went out of their way to kind of encourage their fans to vote. The Mets didn't do it as much. I guess the Mets fans didn't care as much about it. So actually, even Wright clearly deserves to start at third base. I wasn't that angry about it. I was angry about Dickey because I think Tony La Russa showed a complete disrespect to the knuckleball and to R.A. Dickey, who quite frankly has Matt Cain beaten every single stat. And I don't want to hear he threw a perfect game because Phil Umber threw a perfect game. So what the hell does that mean? So I was upset about Dickey not starting. He deserved to start. It's not like it was close. It's not like Cain had him beaten some numbers. R.A. had him beaten every single statistic. He should have started the game. And I just read, this was really funny, that the peak ratings for the All-Star game last night happened to be when R.A. Dickey was on the mound. So hopefully Fox is ticked off at Tony La Russa too.
How about that? I'm sure the Big Apple did its fair share to contribute to that spiked rating. Steve, you and I were talking about this a little bit off air, as we are wont to do with some of the different elements here of the All-Star proceedings. Just, again, finding many farcical different elements about this as we were talking, not just the Mets angle that we just covered with Evan, but a lot of different angles about the last couple of days that have got to be disconcerting, not just the baseball purists, but those who don't like to see these kind of distortions in the game, period.
Well, I think it was a disgrace that R.A. Dickey didn't start. I think it wasn't about Buster Posey. I think it was Tony La Russa, old school baseball. I was trying to come up with a knuckleballer that he had ever managed, but clearly he has a dislike and, as Evan said, a disrespect for the knuckleball itself. But that's really Bush League. The guy doesn't even manage in the league. I thought it was kind of weird that he got to manage the All-Star game. And as Evan said, Dickey 12-1, 2.40 ERA, Matt Cain 9-3, 2.62. And I think I'd almost counter a perfect game, Evan, with two one-hitters back-to-back, as you know, that R.A. Dickey threw this year. And I'll even go to the American League. I'm not a Jared Weaver fan, of course, but he was 10-1 with a 1.96 ERA. And I think Verlander is probably the best pitcher in baseball, but not for the first half of this year. His number's 9-5, 2.58. Very good, don't get me wrong. But I don't think either of the starting pitchers should have started. And I don't go nuts over the All-Star game. I thought both of these were injustices. But when you know the R.A. Dickey story, and if you're a New York guy like I am or a Met fan like Evan, you know the Dickey story both on and off the field, the personal travails, the professional travails. What this guy has done is something we've never seen before. So I frankly thought it was Bush League that he didn't start the All-Star game.
Definitely agree. And you made that very good point to me off air about Weaver and Verlander as well. I hadn't really considered that until you mentioned it, Steve, but you're right on the money. Before we leave behind the All-Star game and get to some actual compelling things here, Evan, I just got to ask you, again, as somebody on air at FAN and fielding the calls and dealing with the pulse of the city and whatnot, thoughts on Robinson Cano and his treatment at the hands of the Kansas City fans the last couple of days? What are the people saying?
Well, I think at the home run derby, some Yankee fans were annoyed, which I understand, but I think for the most part, people thought it was kind of fun. Like, I enjoyed it, and I know you guys would appreciate the wrestling analogy. It felt like I was watching a WWE event, and Cano was the heel, and I found myself rooting for him. You know, I wanted Cano to stick it to the Kansas City fan. I think the story that came out yesterday about Cano saying he was ticked off that they were yelling at his family members, that's crossing the line. I mean, seriously, it was the freaking home run derby, and it's Billy Butler, not Babe Ruth. So I thought it was all fun and games, but then when they start going after Cano's family, maybe the Royal fan is a little nuts because they haven't seen October baseball in so long.
Now, to take your analogy a step further, Evan, the heckling of his family is about as annoying as the booking of John Cena. I think we can all agree on that part. When you cross that line. And that's an entirely different conversation about everything that's wrong with those folks. But and looking at the first half, and I'll start with you, Evan. It's one of these things where in framing this, I want to know if you think it's easy to make too much out of what we've seen, because this doesn't feel to me like just another first half of the season. It feels like one of these ones that you get every so often where you start to feel the ground shifting out from underneath your feet. It's not just Trout and Harper coming along and emerging so quickly. It's not just Washington's pitching rotation starting to look like the young Braves staff of 20 years ago. But you start to factor in the Red Sox and the Phillies starting to look really old overnight. The Yankees, they're winning, but they certainly look a little bit long in the tooth. There's none of those guys that look particularly youthful as they're getting the job done. They almost look more like a vintage 01 or 03 Yankees team that was still winning. Is it easy to make too much out of this thing that we're starting to get into this new era in baseball? We're starting to see things shift a little bit towards new powers and new players, or do you think that it really is what's happening?
Well, I think the Yankees are still the Yankees. You know, I mean, they still have, I think, the best record in all of baseball, despite injuries, despite no Mariano, despite all the issues that they've had. So I don't think the power shifted away from the Yankees, but definitely Boston, definitely Philadelphia. Texas is the new power. I mean, think about it. The Texas Rangers have been in the World Series two straight years. It's crazy to think about. So, you know, the rise of the Pittsburgh Pirates, even the Mets being surprisingly good. I think Cincinnati is starting to show that they're perennially a good team. So we have more competitive balance than we've ever had in Major League Baseball, which is great. But I can't shortchange the Yankees. The Yankees are going to win close to 100 games. They're going to be in the playoffs again.
And if they get hot at the right time, they'll be in the World Series again. But definitely the Red Sox and Phillies, they're clearly not what they've been in years past.
No, no. And let, again, let nobody ever question your objectivity as a Mets fan putting over the Yankees like that. But I think people would be hard-pressed to disagree with what you said there. Steve, what are your thoughts on this whole notion of a little bit of a changing of the balance of power in baseball, a little bit of a new era coming along here? Maybe it was a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but Bryce Harper at the All-Star break at that press conference talking about him and Trout being like Magic and Bird. I mean, what are your thoughts on this and whether we are coming into a new era or whether it's getting a little bit ahead of ourselves to talk about this kind of a shift?
Well, I discount what Bryce Harper said because the Major League Baseball was not in the dumper like the NBA was when Bird and Magic came along. But I think it's even bigger than that in terms of Trout and Harper and kids like him. You know, looking at the bigger picture, youth sports, you know, I'm fortunate to do some work with Joe and Evan on FAN. I do a lot of work with Rick Wolf on the youth sports side now. And what you're seeing, Rick, is these kids are maturing so much younger. You literally have 10, 11, 12-year-olds who will play 60 and 70 games. That was unheard of a generation ago. And I think as a group, these players collectively, I'm not going to tell you they're smarter or more intelligent ballplayers because I don't believe that, but not only are they bigger, faster, and stronger, they're specializing earlier, whether that's good or not. You can debate that for a long time. But there's so many more of them. You see a guy like Harper, you know the way he played the system, and he did a great job, and he's an unbelievably talented kid. But, you know, he graduated high school in 3 years. He enrolled in a junior college. He played in a wood bat league. He really had expert advice around him to get him ready to be this good this early. I happen to think so far, I don't think there's a question that Trout's even better than Harper. And, you know, Harper was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. We all knew about him at 16. Very few people, including the Angels, it seems to me. Socia had to bring him up because Vernon Wells got hurt this year. Otherwise, we might still not have heard of Mike Trout. But I think, generally speaking, in sports, you're having people devoting a lot of time, better training, better nutrition, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it is kind of the beginning. But in terms of the competitive balance, you know, you do see teams like the Pirates this year who have a shot. The Orioles are better. I think it goes back a little bit to what Evan said. The Yankees are the Yankees are the Yankees, and I agree with that. The Phillies, you know, no Ryan Howard, no Chase Utley. They're just getting back now. No Doc Halladay. So they're not the Phillies this year. The Red Sox might even have more injuries than the Phillies. So, yes, injuries play a larger and larger role. I can't remember 25, 30 years ago, these kinds of injuries. I had never heard of an oblique to a few years ago. Evan Longoria out with a hamstring. Now they're saying he may not come back till August. He's the key to Tampa's future. So I do think there is kind of a change coming now, but I still think with respect to the Yankees, they're the Yankees. But yes, with respect to everyone else, the Yankees can get over those major injuries they've had. Other teams still can't.
Well, interesting. And so a question that I've got, and I want to get to both of your perspectives on it. Evan, I'm going to start with you on this one here because of the two of you, you're holding down a microphone there in New York, doing a show in the Big Apple. Steve's Women's Sports Talk Network is a little bit more nationally oriented. But in New York, the media capital of the world, I'd like to get your sense of this. We've talked about this a fair amount on the show in the last couple of months. The fact that baseball has not succeeded in making the stars of recent years household names, and I've gone along and I've talked to some fairly marginal sports fans, folks who knew who Randy Johnson was, Barry Bonds, et cetera, who don't know who Justin Verlander is, couldn't pick Matt Kemp out of a police lineup. A, what are your thoughts on this as far as why this has happened in recent years, and B, do you get a sense that guys like Trout and Harper can maybe break through that?
Yeah, I mean, Major League Baseball, you know, even back when Bonds and Johnson were, you know, superstars of the game, I always felt MLB never did as good of a job marketing their stars as, say, the NBA. I'm not sure the exact reason. I mean, you would think Verlander, who basically is a threat to throw a no-hitter every time he goes out there, guy wins an MVP last year, you would think that these guys would break through. I mean, maybe it has something to do with the steroid era and the fact that baseball really did push all their big slugging home run hitters and then had, you know, kind of egg on their face because all of them, for the most part, turned out to be cheaters. So I'm not exactly sure why, but, you know, look, Derek Jeter is still a household name, but here in New York, he's still kind of the biggest star. And the thing about the New York sports fan is they don't give a damn about anything other than the New York teams winning. You know, that's the number one issue the New York fan cares about. It. So far in New York, the New York teams have been winning. I mean, the Mets have actually been better than people thought. The Yankees are the best record in baseball. But I think, you know, maybe the steroid thing does have something to do with it because they did try to push those guys, you know, McGuire and Sosa and Bonds. And since then, for whatever reason, you're right. I mean, Matt Kemp, as great as he is, you know, he's not, he doesn't, I'm sure he doesn't walk down the streets and get mobbed maybe the same way Big Mac and Sammy Sosa used to back in the day.
Well, that's absolutely true. Good friend of ours, Jeff Briscoe, does a show, The Sports Train, on terrestrial radio down in Fort Myers. When I was on with him, the subject came up for the first time, and I just happened to throw out my dad off the top of my head as a litmus test. And I went back and I asked him, and he'd never heard of all these guys. Clayton Kershaw, he got a blank look on his face, and Troy Tulowitzki, and these are the most star-studded guys going in the game right now. So, yeah, it's really indicative of that. Steve, what are your thoughts on it from your perspective on, you know, whether it's reasons that go beyond what Evan was talking about there, if there's any additional ones you can think of, or if it's just basically a manifestation of Evan's points about a hangover of the steroid era?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the steroids era because the steroids era didn't make stars. It made people do things that we've never seen before. I mean, I remember writing maybe 10 years ago that Babe Ruth's slugging percentage record for a season would never be broken, and then a year or two later, Barry Bonds broke it. It was unfathomable. I remember sitting in the stands at a Met doubleheader when Mark McGuire, the year he hit 70, hit numbers 50 in the first game, number 51 in the second. I took my little kids at the time, and we watched them take batting practice. And if you remember the old Shea Stadium out in left center, they had those Pepsi seats. And he hit 9 balls in a row over the Pepsi seats, and I was sitting in right field thinking, this guy's hitting in a little league field. So they didn't just become stars or superstars, Rick. I think they became bigger than life, and, you know, people would argue literally as well as figuratively because they became such behemoths. The stars we're seeing now, I think it's twofold. I mean, Matt Kemp was a Triple Crown candidate, but I think all the guys we've named, Verlander and Kemp, the younger guys, I mean, they haven't really done it for 6, 8, 10 years. You know, Bonds won 3 MVPs before he became the freak. I thought Bonds would have been a Hall of Famer before he ever took a steroid, if you believe the Game of Shadows timeline. But those guys did superhuman things. Why? Well, we pretty much know why they did superhuman things now. These guys are great players, but all the ones that we've mentioned so far are relatively young. Other than a Jeter and a Mariano, and I'm a lifelong New York fan, those guys are bigger than life. But I think all the superstars we mentioned now are going to have to do it a few more years. And I think at some point they'll get to almost that level. But frankly, we will never get to the level of 1998 because there's never going to be a home run chase like that, as phony as I think it was and many other people think it was. You know, Mike Lupica wrote a book about it. It was a bestseller. But now in retrospect, obviously, I think some people are hurt by the whole thing. I know some people have backed off from baseball because of that. But I think just the physical skills that these people have, and they're superb, just can't match up to what we saw 10, 12, 14 years ago. And I do think that's a big part of the problem.
Could very well be. Yeah, I think you guys have both hit the nail on the head there. As far as the makeup of teams today. Evan, to follow up a little bit on what you were talking about before with how jammed up it is this year, you add in the fact that this is the first year now of two wild cards, and something that it looked like, say, for example, in the American League would be just the province of a handful of teams in the AL East and the AL West. For right now, anyways, it looks pretty wide open. I mean, there's you can't count in both leagues on more than a handful of teams that are out of it right now, and that's if you consider the Phillies of all teams to be one of the teams that's out of it. If you're looking at the teams that are not right there, most of them are, frankly. So thoughts on this, Evan, on how much the second wild card is providing the distortion this year versus the fact that it's just a little more jammed up than usual?
Well, it's funny. If we didn't have the second wild card, the National League, it would still be jammed up. I mean, it's incredible. I think it's the mediocrity of the National League. Because, I mean, I don't think there's nearly a great team in the NL. I mean, who's the best team in the National League? Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, Washington, San Francisco. It's a bunch of real mediocre teams. So I don't even think the second wild card is adding to it. I think everybody would be in the race anyway. What the second wild card is going to do is going to add even more craziness, though. And I think the danger MLB may have is we may literally have, like, four-way at the end of the season, you know, a tie for one wild card, a tie for another wild card, a tie for a division. And we may need like 3 or 4 days of playoff games just to get to the wild card play-in game. So National League could be as just ridiculously kooky as possible. I'm sure there'll be a team or two that drops off. You know, maybe Miami, with all the issues they've had, kind of fade away. Maybe even my team, the Mets, fade away, especially with the latest on G. He may miss the rest of the year. You know, the Dodgers need a healthy Matt Kemp. And, you know, he's going to come back, but what if he re-aggravates the hamstring again? Maybe they'll fade away. But there is a – I mean, the National League is insane, and I don't even think the second wild card is necessary to add to the insanity. It would have been insane even if there was only one wild card.
I think that's absolutely right. I'm looking at the National League standings right now, and, yeah, everything you said is pretty evidently true as far as how jammed up it is. And, yeah, there will be teams falling off. And, yeah, I hate to agree with you for your sake, but, yeah, the Mets on paper look like one of the candidates to peel off at some point here for everything that they've been doing thus far. Steve, taking this a step further, I mean, I think that the thesis of it is fairly evident if we agree on this. But what does this do to the trading deadline at the end of the month here? It does seem like there's not going to be a lot of incentive for a lot of teams to be parting with their best players at this point.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be a lot of sellers because of what you guys just discussed. I did want to go back briefly, though, Rick, to the wild card. I got to say, and I'm admittedly a traditionalist. Put in any word you want, purist, I don't really care. But I was against the wild card for one reason and one reason only. In the history of baseball, unlike football, unlike basketball, unlike hockey, you had to win to win. And if you came in fourth place when Bill Russell won his last title and he went out in the blaze of glory and he won all the championships in the world, his team came in fourth place. And you see hockey teams routinely go from eighth to the finals or eighth with a chance to win the cup. In baseball, this was always foreign. Before 69, you won, you played in the World Series. Even in 1969, you won your division. The Mets played the Braves, you'll recall, before they got to the World Series. But you had to win. And winning the wild card, to me, has never been like winning the division. So now once you go from one wild card, I don't really have a problem going to two because I think you have to give an advantage to the team who won the division. And I've heard Evan and Joe talk about it for years on the air. You didn't have an advantage when you won the division. We saw a number now of wild card teams win the World Series. You're really, really, really going to have to be the best team playing at that time to win the World Series if you're a wild card, because you might get knocked out in that first game now. And if nothing else, you're probably going to have to use your best pitcher, and that's going to hurt you in the next series. So from a wild card perspective, I didn't like it at first. And I understand, look, facetiously, I once wrote they should have the major leagues, no American League, no National League. Let's have 10 three-team divisions. Oh, better yet, let's have 15 two-team divisions, and then the best record of the 15 losers can be the wild card, and we'll have a 16-team playoff, just to show the absurdity. But I personally have always thought in baseball it was different from the other sports because you had to win to get in, and nowadays you don't have to win your division to get in. In terms of the trading deadline, again, a lot of teams are not going to be sellers this year because there's so many teams in the mix. And I think Evan's right. The second wild card, even though a lot of teams, even if there was only one wild card now, you go another 3-4 weeks till the end of July, I think that second wild card will bring even more teams still thinking maybe they've got a chance. Forget being above 500. If you're at 500, if you're just a little below 500 and you still have 2 full months left of the season, you'd be less likely to sell. So I don't think there's going to be lunacy at the trade deadline. Yeah, you know, the Cubs, I don't know, Matt Garza maybe, or the teams that are really out of it. But those teams that are really out of it are only 4, 5, 6 teams maybe. So I think there's not going to be a big, big trading deadline this year.
Move it to August 15th, in my opinion, based on that. I mean, your point's 100% right. July 31st is just too early. I remember back in the day, June 15th used to be the old trade deadline.
Right.
They moved it to July 31st. I think August 15th, it's an extra 2 weeks. I think that would be the new trading deadline. And they may change that eventually because you're right. There aren't enough sellers in the next couple of weeks.
Good call, Evan. And I'll bet you they're going to do that. And they're going to they may even cite the second wild card as a consequence of that, why they're having to do that, whether or not that that ties in 100% or not. But I bet that's the reasoning they go with. Also, to Steve's point on this, I've always found that it's fun just to kind of taunt the Chouds about their 0-4 title, tell them, you know, you do know you didn't even win your division that year for their precious World Series title, like to throw it back at them. a little bit. As we're bringing it around here, looking at the second half of the season, Evan, what are your thoughts on what lies ahead, some of the big storylines of the second half here? You've got Texas that would be at least mildly historic if they're able to win their third consecutive American League pennant. You've got the White Sox really hanging in there with a 1-2 punch in the starting rotation that I think is better than anybody figured it was going to be. Washington and Baltimore, Beltway World Series perhaps. A lot of interesting storylines looking ahead to the second half.
I think the American League is going to get boring because I think the Yankees win the division easy. I think Detroit will eventually straighten things out and win the Central. Texas, Anaheim, Tampa Bay probably all divvy up that second and the top two wild card spots. The National League to me has the storylines because the Pittsburgh Pirates haven't had a winning season in about 5,000 years, and they've got a chance to win the National League Central. So I think the Pirates are a huge storyline. I think what Washington does with Strasburg is going to be fascinating. They keep talking about an innings limit. The Washington Nationals have the best record in the National League. They're in first place in the National League Eastern Division. Are they really going to shut down Steven Strasburg? So I think the Pirates, though, I think that's the number one story. I mean, how fascinating is this? This is a team that hasn't had a winning season since those old Pirate teams that won three straight National League East in the early 90s. And they've got a chance. And I think they're legit, unlike last year where they completely collapsed. So I really think the American League is going to get boring because I think what we thought it was going to be is what it's going to be. New York, Detroit, Texas, Anaheim, Tampa Bay. The National League is absolutely insane, led by the resurgence of the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Absolutely. You know what? It's just funny to hear you say that. One more reason for folks like me, Clevelanders like me, to hate Pittsburgh, that McCutchen has become everything we always wanted Grady Sizemore to become. he's become that guy we thought Grady was going to be, and McCutchen is, I mean, he's one of the best players on the planet as of right now, and he's showing what one guy can do to drag a team to first place, along with a couple other folks on that team, McDonald and a handful of other players. But, yeah, they're not that deep of a team, and it's amazing what they've been doing. Steve,
hey,
what
Rick,
are your thoughts on that? Yeah.
Well, I remember the Yankees used to have a guy named A.J. Burnett, and then somehow the Pirates have a guy of the same name. Somebody told me they were the same guy, but I've actually watched that A.J. pitch this year, and he doesn't look at all like the guy who pitched for the Yankees. I mean, he's probably the comeback player of the year, and believe me, it hurts me to say that. But McCutchen's a legit MVP candidate. You know, you talk about young players who are not household names yet. This guy was great last year and is even beyond that this year. Clint Hurdle's the manager of the year. I was talking earlier about Terry Collins, and Terry Collins has done a fantastic job, but Clint Hurdle right now, remember what he did with Colorado back in 2007, I think it was. They wound up losing to the Red Sox, but they won the pennant. Clint Hurdle has had a pretty good managerial career, and nobody knows really who he is either. You ask at least where I live in New York, you ask 10 people who the manager of the Pirates is. Even baseball fans, I think maybe one or two will know it's Clint Hurdle. So, yeah, I think the Pirates are legit. I like Cincy before the season started. I love Johnny Cueto. If you get a chance to watch him pitch, boy, is he a fun guy to watch pitch. I would agree with Evan, American versus National. I think the whole Tampa Bay thing relies totally on Evan Longoria and his health. I don't think Boston can get back there. I think the playoff picture, I know it's very early, but the playoff picture in the American League is almost set. But the National League, who's going to collapse after the All-Star break? Again, I think Collins has done a great job. But when you're trotting out Dickey, now an ace, and Santana, who's come back like an ace, you know, miracle, no-hitter, that shoulder injury that took Chin Ming Wong 2 years to come back from, and he's never really been Chin Ming Wong again. I mean, that's a testament to Santana's work ethic. You heard all the interviews in New York where he just said, be patient, I'm working hard, be patient, I'm working hard, and nobody thought he could get back to this level. So you trot those two guys out. Obviously, you need five, and yeah, Dylan G going down is going to be a big problem. But, you know, the Mets are not out of it. You could almost reverse the standings in the NL East. I've talked about this on the air a lot, where you have the Phillies and Miami at the bottom. Who would have thought that? And, of course, the Phillies have been, you know, killed by injuries. But Washington and the Mets at the top, and Washington's a great story. You know, if they were really going to hold Strasburg to 160 innings, they really shouldn't have pitched him the first fill-in-the-blank. 3-4 weeks, 6-8 starts. I mean, that's really going to be stupid. They're going to be under incredible pressure if they're fighting for a playoff spot. And I think they will be. They're legit. The NL East is a tough division. Yeah, the Phillies are hurting. The Marlins aren't playing well. But Atlanta's good. The Mets are good. The Nationals are good. That's a tough division. It's not the AL East, and I thought it might be. But it's still a very, very good division. So I'd be shocked if they shut him down. But if they do shut him down, then next year they shouldn't start him until the third or fourth week of the season. Because how can you take a guy out in the middle of a pennant race or limit him now to 5 innings every start, which, again, I don't agree with, but if that's the way they're going to go, they need him in August and September. They didn't really need him in April, especially if they had any sense they were going to get off to the start. I don't think anybody thought they would get off to that start. And don't forget, they've done it all without Jason Worth, essentially, who wasn't great last year, but I think he's a very good player who can help them a lot as well.
Well, yeah, and Michael Morse was out of there part of the time also,
right,
too. And again, when you look at it, my guess is that they split the difference. Throw in a sixth starter from time to time, limit him to 5 innings a start. I'd be surprised if it was anything as drastic as shutting him down. I think the fans would probably riot if they did that. But, Steve, always great having you on. I enjoy that we're able to do this very regularly, having you as one of our FDH Lounge dignitaries. I know we're going to do it again here. And, Evan, it's been a while, but it's always a lot of fun. Come on back on. We'll talk to Graps. We'll break down a whole bunch of things here. Always a pleasure, my friend.
Anytime. Thanks, fellas.
All right,
good to be with you, Rick. We'll do it again.
Wonderful. Thank you all for tuning in. Also, FDH Lounge mini episode number 151.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.